Blog Talk Radio.
Got the real sports guys. We're real sports guys. We're real guys talk real sports. You got D. Wills. We got my man, the game changer, Marcus. Ray will not be with us tonight. He's somewhere lost in Minneapolis, taking his daughter to visit colleges, St. Olaf and McAllister and Carleton up there. So he won't be able to join us this week. You know, as real sports guys, we got lives we got to do. So we're going to hold it down with two of us. We got a long night here, and we're going to start out with the South African wins the Open. Louis.
Louis.
But Tiger doesn't capture another championship. He finishes farther out of the top 10 with 23rd. Is $750 million poor. I mean, it's a bad time. So what do you think, Marcus, about what's happening with Tiger?
I think he should change his name. He shouldn't be Tiger anymore. He should do like Puffy has done and change his moniker. You know, he changes his tag, and, you know, he gets new life. You know, his first name was Sean Puff, then he was Puff Daddy, and he's P. Diddy. You know, and with each change, that's helped him. But I think Tiger needs to realize is that he ain't the same dude no more. You know, the hype factor. You know, the hype factor is a huge thing for athletes. The hype factor is what made LeBron think that the decision was a good idea. You know what I mean? It's what made Gilbert Arenas think it was a good idea to bring pistols into the locker room. It's that hype factor where players start to believe everything that they hear around them, and it's a double-edged sword. At the same time, it can make them disillusioned and out of touch with the rest of the world. It also gives them that edge that they need to go out there and think they can move mountains on the court or on the field or on the course. I think Tiger's, his hype is dead. His hype died when he signed down the bottom line to give up $750 million. I mean, this is a man who in the last year has died probably 15 deaths. I mean, every time he had to pay some chick some hush money not to talk about him or not to send out text messages or not to do interviews, a little bit of that Tiger that we knew died. You know, and I think what we're seeing now is a athlete who's trying to regain and find his edge. I mean, he was invincible. This is a dude who was a perfectionist. And he was invincible, he was a perfectionist, and he can no longer even go out there and convince himself that he's that anymore because he's got some blatant shortcomings that now the whole world can see, you know. And I think golf is such a mental game that I think that's having a tremendous effect on his ability to go out there and perform the way he's used to performing. He's not the same dude anymore. He has to become comfortable in this new him. He has to be comfortable with this new image, with this new aura that is around him. He's not the invincible, perfect Tiger anymore, where he comes out there and people just awed by this dude. People can see the warts. His booty's hanging out right now. You know what I mean? And it's hard to play golf like you the man when your booty hanging out. And that's basically what's up with Tiger right now. And it's going to be interesting to see how long it takes him to figure out how to be this new, I don't know if you want to call himself Tigger or T. Woods or Eldridge, but he needs to reinvent himself ASAP.
I would look at that, and I've been thinking about this long and hard. I think what he needs to do, truthfully, is embrace his new self and his new life. I mean, I think what he needs to do is say, I got a wild side. I'm divorced now. I'm going to go to my Jeter mode. I'm out here. I'm going to do my thing. I think he has to just realize, you know, he did all the stuff he felt to save his marriage, where his marriage is gone. So I think what he's got to do is say, okay, I'm going to get back to drilling myself because I don't have anybody. I'm $750 million short. The relationship is non-existent. So, you know, other than my focus on my kids, you know, I can't just be me. So if you see me out at in Vegas, I'm just out in Vegas. I'm single. Don't say nothing to me. Whatever, and embrace that new life. And I think that's part of his transition right now, where he just got to say, this is who I am, and I'm going to roll with it. I think where Tiger has longevity, I mean, everybody's talking about golfers usually start to go down around 33 or 34. I think what's different about Tiger in this generation of golfers is their athleticism and their commitment to conditioning.
Absolutely.
And their commitment to working. So I think his longevity actually, I think he has many more positive years in terms of golf. It's ain't like throwing a football. And cats like Nicholas and others back then, Arnold Palmer, they weren't working out and training at the level that Tiger trains for golf. So my prediction is he got through this season. He kind of came into the Masters without a lot of preparation. You know, in these other two majors, he finished, the top five?
Yep.
So he struggled with some other things, but he was finishing the top five. In the biggest case, more so than Tiger, was Mickelson. Mickelson's had every chance to take over number one. He has it. And you hear no criticism of that. Mickelson has had every chance to be the man, to be the guy. Everybody wants to cheer for him, and he can't rise to the moment. So in some ways, he's given Tiger a chance to rebound. A couple of these guys have had their career wins and won a major and done some things, but none of the major players have stepped up and done what they need to do. So in some ways, they've given Tiger a chance to recover. I think even if he doesn't win this next major, I think he goes into almost like an offseason, or he goes into a time where he's able to gather himself. He done got past all that stuff. He don't have to be in the limelight. He done talk to the press. He's dealt with the European, British press already with the Open. He's got through this first round, and my prediction is he comes back stronger. Once he realizes, I don't really have to hang. You know, if you see me out with somebody, I'm not married. So it ain't like he got to live a private life. He got to do this stuff. He can be him, and folks can judge how they want to judge. I think that's going to be tough for him, I think. But I think that's the step he has to get to.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's part of what killed him in the beginning, is that he just didn't come out and step to people and be like, look, I did it.
Yes.
That's all y'all need to know. You know, the rest of it, I got to answer to my wife. I don't need to apologize to y'all, really. You know, he just isn't embracing that. You know, that's one thing I can appreciate about LeBron James, is that I think he's embracing his new role as a villain a little bit better.
Yes.
Than Tiger has embraced his role as the villain. You know, Tiger just needs to sit down with his boys and come up with a way to market this.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And that's what boils down to it. Once he realizes, I'm not that dude anymore, that old Tiger is dead, like, nobody's buying that dude anymore. When he comes out there, he's rocking the red, and he's trying to conjure up that mystique that he had before. None of the other golfers, Louis wasn't intimidated.
No.
Mr. Oosthuizen wasn't intimidated. Like, nobody's falling for it. Nobody's digging that anymore, Tiger. Like, you're not scaring us. And I think that's the approach that the other golfers have now, is that, like, oh, well. Dude, you got worse just like I got worse. You're not perfect. You're not invincible. You're not the son of a god.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I think that was the way they looked at him before. Like, yo, man, this dude got some Zeus in him.
That's right.
You know, he got some Zeus blood in him. And we can't really do nothing with that. But, you know, now Tiger's human.
That's right. And what he can do is use this against people. Okay, take me lightly. You know, I'm going to come right back at you. You know, get on Saturday Night Live. Laugh at yourself. Get on Jimmy Kimmel. You know, laugh at
bring
yourself.
Your girlfriend to the game.
Yeah, bring either do.
Have
you know,
her
just,
out there on the course, you know. Just like, I mean, he just needs to, like, let go of what was and move forward. You know, he already 750 million dollars short, which is just ridiculous to me, man. Every time I think about that number, I mean, you could take up all the free agents that have signed contracts in any sport this summer, this off season, and it wouldn't add up to what Elon just came away with, man. I mean,
I want to know who her law firm is. I mean,
man.
I mean, I'm like, man, I know Cochran didn't do divorce, but, man, he needed Cochran. He needed somebody.
He needed.
Was his team? I mean, I was saying to somebody the other day, I said, if you were scoring this, if this was boxing, he got shut out. This is like TKO, knockout. I'm like, who is in your corner? And if they are, they owe you money.
For real. For real. I mean, man, that is setting a bad precedent.
Yeah,
and you know, that brother Lucky, he paid Elon last. He had to came up off that divorce money first. All them floozies he was running with would have got over. I mean, they would have been like, oh, you're going to give her $750 million? You can give me $100 million to be quiet.
And I'm not mad at her getting the money because she went through some stuff out here in public and everything else. But I'm saying $750, there got to be a threshold. I mean,
yeah, like, ain't there some sort of salary cap for divorce on divorce settlement? He ain't have his capologist working on that.
Oh my goodness, we got to go to arbitration or something. I had $600 million before we met. How you gonna get $750? I won like 13 championships before we met, or whatever it might be. You know, 6, 7. You know, so I think. You know, he's got to get over it and begin to do it because I think
that's his problem, man. He paid $750 million to, like, preserve the image of the old tiger, the tiger that's dead. You know, there's a dead tiger laying on the side of the road somewhere. You know what I mean? Poached. And he's trying to save that tiger by paying $750 million. Let her write her book. She ain't going to make $750 million writing no damn books.
That's what I said. He took all that money to try to say that she can't talk or do anything else after that. And I'm thinking,
right?
I'm going to give you I'll give you $200 million. Say what you want.
I gave you $30. Like, do what you got to do. It's already out there. You know what I'm saying? You got TMZ on speed now. Do what you need to do.
I was at lunch the other day, and someone said, well, if they gave you $750 million to get divorced, you know, would you do it? And I said, shoot, my wife would be like, you know, we've been together for 15 years. They didn't say anything that we couldn't live together.
Right.
That money. But she was cracking up. My wife was like, take that $750 million. We can figure out how to coexist, common law marriage or something. But
We get an offshore. We get a little offshore thing going on.
But yeah, I think I really in my gut, and maybe I just because I like the comeback story. My gut, because I know the training he's going to be doing, and I just at some point he's going to stop being polite, which you already have seen. At some point he's going to say, you know what, I just got to do me. And at this point, it don't matter how I live my life privately or publicly right now, because it was all of my whole change had to do with preserving my family and my marriage. That's gone. You know, other than loving my kids and doing what I got to do, you know, I think, did she have, like, he couldn't have any other women in her kids in the house? Like, she had something else in there. She trying to.
Yeah. He can't have any women he's not in a serious relationship around the kids. It's a whole bunch of stipulations, man. It's like, all the rules they got, it's worse than baseball. Like, he can't cross the driveway when she pulling up or something like that, man. It's just weird.
So he's got to get him, he's got to get a place, you know, in Vegas and do what he do. But he's got to figure out how to just come to terms with what his life is going
to
be.
He needs to say hello to the bad guy.
Yeah.
He needs to say hello to the bad guy. Man, just embrace that.
Say, embrace your darker side.
Seriously.
Yeah, come on over, man. The dark side of the force is a wonderful thing. Look how Kobe's flipping around, man. He used the dark side to score 81 points, and everybody forgot about Colorado for a minute.
That's right. That's right.
That's the beauty about being an athlete when you mess up is that the only reason people know you is because you perform on your field and in your sport. And once you start to do that, then that's what people remember. And they forget the other stuff. The other stuff is a temporary distraction, which is why LeBron is going to come out of this okay at the end.
Do you think about what George said? I mean, and Magic coming out, I mean, you know, we haven't talked about that, but, I mean, when you think about it, what do you think about that?
It's easy to holler at a dude driving a Ferrari saying, I would only buy American cars. Mm-hmm. When you got three Cadillacs you're rolling with, you know what I mean? Magic played with two other Hall of Famers pretty much all the time. Jordan played with another Hall of Famer all the time. And, you know, I mean, Bird all played with two other Hall of Famers. Well, several other Hall of Famers, matter of fact. So, I mean, like, that's the rich telling the poor not to go get money.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, LeBron is just trying to put himself in a position to win. Again, how he did it was whack. But I can't fault what he's doing. You know what I mean? I think it does take him out of that conversation as one of the all-time greats because I don't think Mike or Magic or Larry was going to leave their team and go join somebody else's team. They may have like a 1A or a B level or, you know, a number two come play with them, but they wasn't going nowhere else. They was going to wear their colors all the way through. You know, Mike was going to wear that red and black, and Larry was going to wear the green and white, and Magic was going to wear the purple and gold all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
The pieces around them may have changed, but I don't think you would ever see them jump ship and leave their turf and go and play for somebody else because to me, that's what they're talking about. But I think the NBA was very different when they were playing because it was only 24 teams, you know, and you could have help and you could have multiple guys and the structure of contracts and everything was different. You know, like I hinted at last week, you know, CP3's thinking about leaving. Carmelo's thinking about leaving. If I'm an owner, I'm coming at these dudes with, like, why don't y'all give up some of this guaranteed money? You know, y'all give up these guaranteed deals, and I could cut some of these bones. I could get rid of Kenyon Martin instead of paying him $17 million a year. He ain't worth that. You know, I can cut him and get you some help. But y'all got to get rid of those guaranteed contracts, you know?
But one of the things I would say about LeBron's decision was it wasn't like he didn't have other strong options if you were being competitive, right? So it wasn't like, you know, you put LeBron on that Chicago team. I mean, that's a strong team right now by itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with the additions they just made. But you put him on the Chicago team with the idea that I'm trying to help elevate this to the next level. I think he would have been looked at in a different way.
Absolutely.
His staying in Cleveland wasn't the Cleveland management hurt his ability to stay in Cleveland because when everybody else was moving, they basically cornered themselves because they got a lot of B and D list talent.
Yep.
And they couldn't move anything. So when everybody else was making moves, Cleveland didn't do anything to help.
Cleveland was designed to be a one man show. That team was designed to be a one man show.
That's right.
You know, it was. That's just what it was. It was designed, you know, it was Martin.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was. It was the Martin show, you know what I mean, back in the 90s. You take Martin off that show, and ain't nobody watching that show.
That's right.
You know what I mean? There was no other stars on that show. You know, Tisha Campbell, you know, everybody else. I don't even know the other people on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it was. It was the Martin show.
Mm-hmm.
And you take Martin off that show, and you got a subpar product.
That's right.
What they're
going to
see now in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was part of, you know, I think more or less the comments for him. But I think that, you know, in closing out the season, one of the interesting things is that they keep backing off. They came out with this lot of bravado and hype, but now they seem like they're backing off a little bit, you know, with Wade's comments, which, you know, people are raising a lot of hype about, you know, what he used in terms of an example, which, you know, it was a poor choice of words.
Absolutely, it was a poor choice of words.
Poor choice of words and everything else. But I think what you're beginning to see is for them kind of trying to lower the expectations. I mean,
yeah.
They kind of realize it. So you see them kind of backing off.
But again, they are, but then they ain't. Because this is what I had a problem with D-Wade's comments. I didn't have a problem with the reference in so much of the reference itself. What I had a problem with was the arrogance behind the reference.
Mm-hmm.
And like being like, y'all going to blow this up, like, if we lose a couple of games.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, understanding, like, because I think that's what's really turning people off to that team, is that they're realizing that D-Wade and LeBron and Bosh just aren't in tune with reality. They aren't as savvy as we thought they were as far as being able to present themselves and present their personas, you know, in a way that that's why the D-Wade comments got blown up, is because people are like, dude, y'all are just taking this too far. Like, y'all think y'all way more important than y'all really are. You're comparing you guys losing a couple of games to the World Trade Towers coming down.
Yeah.
It's just kind of ridiculous. And it's not that big of a deal, but it just speaks to that arrogance that you guys are carrying yourselves with. You know, they're trying to back up, but they're still backing up in a very self-important and grandiose way, which
yeah.
is, again, just it everything they do right now oozes like our shit don't stink.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Like LeBron, what he actually did was very selfless and very admirable from a sports fan's perspective. This man took less money to go to a place where he could win championships and put himself in a position where he could win championships.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want. That's what you want from any guy, you know, who's playing sports. But he is such, like, his arrogance, his inner diva came out in, you know, Lady Gaga fashion. Like, he's got a Lady Gaga interview with, like, just came out like, boom, here I am, the decision. And it's like, dog, you didn't have to put it like that. Like, you didn't have to show up the game butt naked. But you did. You could have just thrown some boxes. We wouldn't have said anything, but you just let it all out there. You just put your diva on display. That's what LeBron did, man. That's what he did. He came out there. The emperor had no clothes on. You know what I'm saying? The emperor had no clothes on. And it was like, oh, this is what you really are. I mean, like, you could take something that's selfless and actually worth applauding and make it just taste like garbage.
Mm.
That's like somebody taking a filet mignon, putting it on your table, and then, you know, pouring dead flies on it or something, just making it unedible. And that's what he did. He took something that should have been easily digestible, that's something that we could have ate up, and just made it uneatable.
But another digestible thing and kind of understanding, this kind of brings us back as we've talked a little bit about realignment in college football. But, you know, the recent, you know, sanctions and, you know, looming and what's going on with SC. And I see that Garrett was just fired and now they got Pat Hayden coming in as the AD. And then with Florida, I mean, you got this player right before the bowl game. Allegedly, you know, taking money from an agent. You know, we talked about South Carolina. All these things coming up around these players, and you know, I just thought about, you know, how difficult it is to be a college coach today, and the expectations to monitor these behaviors. And we really got to think differently about how we actually look at this issue, because it's like, you know, you're trying to keep a dam from bursting. I mean, people can't be everywhere every time. I mean, in the case of like a Reggie Bush, you know, you got extended family. You know, how are you governing that? You
right.
know, and so it's like, you know, at what point is it not the expectation of the program to monitor its behavior, and how do you start to penalize, you know, not penalize the 70, 18-year-olds who are going to SC right now who had nothing to do with it? You know,
right.
and now you're hurting their future. What do you think, man?
Hey, it's astounding to me how hypocritical this whole process has become. You know, I'm looking at the wire right now. I'm looking at the sports wire right now. You got Bama's looking into one of their players for attending an agent's party. You got, you know, Washington, a player from the University of Washington. They're looking into one of their players. The NCAA is looking into UNC, North Carolina, and South Carolina. You know, USC just got hit. Florida's going to get hit. And it's like, are y'all serious? Like, my understanding is that these rules were put in place to prevent schools from having an unfair advantage in recruiting and getting players to go to their universities.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, like that it's hypocritical because that's what the BCS does. The BCS system itself gives these schools an unfair advantage. If Utah, a Boise State, a TCU can go undefeated and not have a crack at a national championship, if I'm a five-star recruit, why would I go to TCU? Why would I go to Boise State? Why would I go to Utah if I have an opportunity to go to Florida, USC, Ohio State, Texas? Why would I go to those schools if they can go undefeated and still not have a chance to play for the national championship?
Mm-hmm.
Why would I even consider those schools? So how is that not an unfair advantage? How is that not any different than an agent giving a kid money? You know, you were saying how this is how these rules make it hard on coaches. These rules make it hard on kids.
Yeah.
Because if I'm, you know, Darius, the defensive lineman from Alabama, is getting looked at because he went to a party that was thrown by an agent in Miami Beach. What is he supposed to do? I mean, these kids can't have jobs. They really can't study what they want to study because all their whole life revolves around their sport, which is fine because their schooling is getting paid for whatever. You know, but again, that's a whole nother show. You know, that's a whole nother show about how these universities exploit these kids and don't allow them the opportunity to study what they want to study because everything revolves around their practice and weightlifting and conditioning and conditioning schedule and those kind of things. So if you got a major that you want to do that conflicts with that, well, you got to do something else, son. Yeah, but that's a whole nother show. But and then, you know, once these kids become pro eligible, then you got agents and people coming at them with all these different opportunities. And, you know, it's like giving a starving man, you know, a Monte Cristo. Yeah, it's bad for him. You know, it's bad for him to eat. But it's going to taste good when you ain't ate nothing in a while. You know, so, I mean.
You got to
come. I mean, the NCAA has to just, like, stop trying to police this stuff. Once a kid becomes. I mean, this is what has to happen. Once a kid becomes, once they've done their 3 years and they're eligible to leave, then they can talk to agents and do that. Like, once they put in those 3 years, they're 3 years removed from their high school graduating class or whatever, they should be able to talk to agents, get money from agents, all of that, because that ain't going to give Florida no more an advantage than they already got. It ain't gonna help Florida recruit kids no more than it already is. It ain't going to help you. The agents, all of these schools have, all of the top schools have agents and boosters and hangers-on who help these kids out anyway. So it's not like these kids aren't getting these benefits.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, when you look at what happened with Florida, what's going to be interesting is, you know, Florida has a law that addresses the tampering by agents. So it's going to be interesting with the case in Florida, you know, what officials in Florida actually do from a legal standpoint to go after agents. But, you know, it does put the reason why I said about coaches, because if you have a coach who's trying to do the right thing by their kids and have to deal with all these forces, you know, these are young people who are trying to develop and grow. You know, a lot of them come from working class, you know, low income backgrounds, trying to make a difference, trying to break the cycle, you know, done enough positive things to stay on track, to keep moving. You know, they have very difficult schedules, like you said. They don't have a chance to really explore what it is they're going to do, even though their careers are short. You know, a lot of these kids who make all this money end up going broke. The statistics show it. So, you know, we create this system that at the end of the day, for a lot of them, they end up in tough situation at the end of the day. And, you know, we have the NCAA out here on one end talking about the integrity of the system. On the other end, they're exploiting it for the money, whether it be NCAA basketball and how they might be working that whole thing or whatever. Whatever's good for the NCAA, they're going to eat. They're going to eat. And I think that's the hypocrisy, right, that you talk about. And it makes it a very difficult challenge for people who want to do the right things by these kids. And so you're right, we got to think about, you know, we got to sit down and, you know, we got to break the system. You know, I had a proposal out, you know, with, you know, Lincoln, creating a bank jersey sales, creating opportunities with, so for some of these top flight athletes, they track these sales. Can you bank for that?
Right.
Whether they decide to go in the league or get hurt or whatever, there's something at the end, but they get a percentage of things that they produce based on their play here. Everybody talks about the education, but, the kid who gets a full-ride scholarship, academic scholarship, still can get paid to work at IBM.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have young people on our campuses, especially on these large campuses, who are able to leverage themselves. So in ways that these athletes are not. And they come in, some of them have full academic scholarships, just like athletes. They have access to a lot of different things, plus they have the ability to go make more money. So, I think we're going to have to take a radical move on this because it's put a lot of pressure in a lot of places. And they obviously ain't working.
Right. Right.
Bottom line, it ain't working. Whatever you try, it's not working. And you got to look at something different with these kids. So we got to track this story, man. I know we got to come back to it. And we got to get a segment, maybe once we get into the football season, kind of talking about it'd be interesting bringing both our backgrounds in higher education and in education. I mean, now that you're working, with the KT, how we see this stuff and, and the impact of it when, these young people aren't able to make even decisions about, everybody talks about them going to academics, but where do they have the opportunity to make choices about what they want to study? That's half of the battle.
So-and-so didn't even go to class. Well, I wouldn't go to badminton 101 either.
Yeah, I mean, what are you motivated to do? So, I love to get in there because I love to tell a story. I remember beating Stephon Humphries, All-American at Michigan. I'll tell that story when we talk about this, in terms of being able to study what you want to study. One of the things I know we want to talk about is with baseball and some of this hitting and, a lot of the conversations around, steroids and hitting and the averages and the change in the game. I know you want to hit in on that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things that have kind of piqued my interest. The fact that A-Rod is about to hit, he's two home runs away from 600, and nobody gives a damn. I mean, that's one thing. That used to be a real big deal, That steroid era has really, and the fact that he's implicated in that whole situation, like people don't care. I mean, there's not a lot of hoopla around A-Rod. There's no watch for A-Rod to get 600 homers. But just overall, I was always really against the use of steroids in sports in general, just because as a former athlete, to me, just thinking about the type of players I like to watch, the guys that we consider dogs. Dogs don't use steroids. The dog wants to beat you on his God-given ability.
That's right.
And then after he beats you, he wants to look you in the face and be like, I got you.
That's right.
Ain't nothing you can do about it. I got you today. So it always kind of rubbed me the wrong way that guys was running to use steroids to try and get an advantage. To me, that's just whack. It's just weak to me. And then, the people who like baseball, again, I'm not a big fan of baseball anymore. I haven't been since I was a kid. But one of the reasons is because it's like people that like baseball were defending, steroids don't help you hit a baseball. Y'all sure y'all want to stick to that argument now? Because, I mean, how many perfect games have been like two and almost three because a ref blew a call? That's another thing. Like, baseball just kills me. It's just like the most backwardest sport, man. Like, it's 2010, and they scared a replay. Like, come on, man. Like, get some replay, all right? It could be done real quick. We're going to have 3D TVs, and baseball still debating whether or not they should have replay. You know what I mean? And it's still cats who are against replaying baseball. Come on, man. What needs to happen? Like, this kid had a perfect game taken away from him because of just, like, this backwards mentality in baseball, this purist mentality. But, again, I digressed on that real quick. But, I mean, just overall, like, the fact that hitting has taken such a hit tells me that steroids had a major, major impact. And I think it's an impact that everybody acknowledges, but no writers, nobody in the mainstream media is saying anything about it. They're just trying to ignore it. And that's what annoys me about baseball. It doesn't look at itself critically. Nobody's talking about this. Everybody wants that whole steroid thing to go away. The same way they want to minimize it and say it isn't that important or it wasn't that big of a deal, they also don't acknowledge it and say, okay, well, you know, so-and-so put up those numbers because he was probably a Roy guy. You know, they don't have those conversations because they just want it to go away. And that annoys me. That you just try to ignore it and make it go away, that rubs me the wrong way because it's obvious, all right? It's pretty obvious this year. Batting averages are down across the board. Home runs are down across the board. Slugging percentages are down across the board. And, you know, I was listening to what show was it, Van Pelt today, and they had someone on, and they were talking about how, it can be attributed to people investing more in their pitching, you know, and developing, and the pitching's finally catching up with the hitting. And they had like 10 different reasons why batting averages are down, and none of them were because dudes is off roids and their bat speed is slower. You know what I mean? And it's like, one thing I'm big on, especially with sports, is let what I'm watching be authentic. Let the conversation around what I'm watching be authentic. You know, that's why I like college sports, but for me, college sports, I like college sports because of atmosphere and environment, not because of the sport itself, because it's an inferior brand when you compare it to the professional level. It just is. You know, that's why you have college stars who get to the pros and they flame out, because in college you can do a bunch of stuff on the field, on the court, that you can't do in the pros. And I like to know what I'm watching. And with baseball, that's why I can't really get into it, because for so long, it's like, well, yeah, dude hit 50 home runs, but I can't get excited about that because it's like wrestling. It's like wrestling. They might as well script it if they're going to let cats, you know, roid up. That was my perspective at the time. If you're going to let a cat roid up, well, then just write a nice script with it, too, and just make it WWE and just roll with it like that if that's what you like. But I want to see cats go out there and compete with what God gave them. And it's obvious that wasn't going on in baseball, and now baseball is scared to own up to it. And, again, this is another reason why I just can't – I've been trying to pay attention to it, and I've been trying to get into it, but this cloud is just stopping me from really being able to appreciate what anybody is doing, because it's like – even the pitchers is like, well, now cats ain't really know. Now y'all striking them out, which is great. But, like, it's a cloud that I can't, it's a wall, it's a mental block I can't get over to get into baseball, because I've really been trying to, like, get back into it so that so I can participate and talk about it, be knowledgeable about it. But it's just there.
Yeah, and I'm probably going to say something that's blasphemy, but, you know, baseball's history is shattered and beaten and tattered as our country's history, in a sense that it's, you know, everybody talks about Ruth in that era, and he played with Latino ball players and African American ball players.
Right.
I mean, the era, I always say baseball didn't start until probably the 60s, when you had an opportunity for everybody who could be eligible to play to compete. And
mm-hmm.
But it doesn't own up to that history, you know. It sheds these whole kind of markers on the modern day player. So yeah, people took steroids, but they're taking amphetamines. They were doing, you don't know what they were doing back in Ruth's era. They had loaded bats. They had dead balls. They had all these different things. I mean, it's been part and core of the game, which means it was, you know, you had some of the most cheating happening in the game. One of the biggest scandals, you know, happened with the Sox and
right.
So
Black Sox, yeah.
Yeah. So you have all of that, and they still managed to talk about purity. It's almost like the religious right taking a claim on religion, like nobody else goes to church. It's
right.
it's like, and then people buy it. You know, people buy
right.
it. It's like,
right.
you mean to tell
right.
me? I mean, I go to church. I like. You know, I have all these values, and I'm not, you know,
right.
I'm not
being,
right in public.
Life. being pro-life but then being out for the war.
Yeah, it's like, and if people buy it,
how does that coexist in your mind?
How you do? And we just buy it. And you know, I think, you know, I listen to George Brett. I love George Brett. And what I admire about baseball, and that's probably why, you know, I didn't like as much as Delroy era, because I felt like there wasn't no strategy to the game but putting your bat on the ball. And, you know, and I was seeing, like, shortstops, and I'm like, what's going on with this game? Mm-hmm. And I actually liked it, you know, and this is why I got so mad at Barry Bonds, because I think before he started taking steroids, he was doing it the right way, you know,
mm-hmm.
stealing the bases, hitting for power, you know, 5-tool guy, man. That to me is greatness. That's like being able to be all around. And the fact that he couldn't see that was valuable was
mm-hmm.
disappointing. You know, he couldn't hold on to that, you know, his godfather, you know, Mays, you know, that's how he did it. You know, this cat could play defense. He could hit for power. He ran for speed, you know. And so, listening to a guy like Brett, you know, even, you know, with the Pine Tarts and whatever, withstand it, you know, this is a guy who did all of it, too. And so, I think what's good about the game where it's going right now is that you're beginning to see the speed come back. You begin to see guys like Crawford and some of these other guys who can play many different ways. You begin to see the skill of the game come back by necessity. But also with the steroids, some of the biggest abusers were pitchers. You know, they don't get enough light on it, but some of them won't get into the hall. So, you know, unless you were Glavin or somebody like that, or, you know, who, you know, was obviously a finesse pitcher, you know, someone like that, you know, a lot of these power pitchers, I mean, they're under question. So, you know, I think it's a game that I think struggles, like our country struggles, with its history. I think it knows it has a real battered history and sometimes doesn't come to terms with it. And then when people talk about purity of the game, I'm like, there was nothing pure about baseball through the early centuries. It was battered with a whole bunch of stuff. And people just don't acknowledge it. So I think, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think if they're smart, where they're going has a lot of potential. They just got to figure out how to market these players who are bringing all these different skills to the table.
Yeah.
You know, these all-around athletes.
Yeah, and see, that's the part of it that, like, don't talk down to me and talk to me about all these stats and all these great players. When you had eras where people were excluded, you had eras where people were on this and people were on that. You had entire eras.
That's right.
You know what I mean? 10, 20 year periods where, you know, certain populations are not involved in the game, but yet you want to sell me on the greatness of certain players. I can't buy into that.
No.
You know, I just can't. You know, I can't appreciate that. You know, I can appreciate it for what it is, but you can't sell me on it. And, you know, to me, it's a lot of nostalgia. Well, I grew up on baseball, and I didn't know about that when I liked baseball. But now that I know about it, well, it's okay, and I'm not gonna critique baseball because I loved it so much as a kid. And that argument to me is just, I just can't get into it. But I do hope they find a way to again reach out to somebody like me who wants to just feel I'm watching an authentic product and just not something that's, you know, maybe in a couple years when, you know, the cloud of the steroid era kind of faded away a little bit. Maybe.
Yeah, and what baseball had was it had the characters, man. You know, the cat. For me, growing up, the Catfish Hunters, Tim Foley choking up the bat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love that Pittsburgh team with Stargell and all those guys. And you know, you had the White Sox, the guys with Luzinski and all those guys, big bombers guys who just. You had these different characters of the game, and that's one thing I think about pro sports in the interest of building the corporate brand. Have we lost the individuality? That's why I love Ocho Cinco and some of these guys in terms of how they're doing it. And what I've been on record about what I did like about what LeBron and those guys did, that they took some power away, and sometimes that needs to happen. And, you know, demonstrated that they do have leverage. But I think sometimes the league in controlling the message and everything else, these leagues, that they take away from some of these individual uniqueness that draws people to characters. when they do it right. And that part I miss about sport.
Absolutely. You know, I tell my brother all the time, like, you know, there will never be another Muhammad Ali.
Yes.
You know, there'll never be a guy who can be that fanboy and say what he want to say, do what he want to do, but still be that popular, you know, and still be that universally accepted, you know, for a lot of his views and universally revered for just being himself. Because LeBron will never speak up on anything political. Why? Because he's trying to be a billionaire athlete. Tiger Woods will never really take a stance on something unless it's just so heinous that, you know. And so at the end of the day, you just don't feel like these dudes are anything but athletes, you know. And they are more than that, but they don't share that because that's going to hurt their bottom line. And I understand that, but it also takes away from what they could be, you know.
And I think part of it is, you know, demonstrating to young people the possibilities and igniting, you know, even if you're an entrepreneur and you're branding that way, how do you create opportunities and thinking around that within communities that you come from,
mm-hmm.
being that bold? I think, you know, that whole consciousness, you know, I like I said, I talked to a group of athletes and some parents, and I, you know, Division I athletes, and said, you know, did you know that Shaq had a master's degree? And everybody's like, what? And part of it is because folks don't want to know that. He don't work on a doctorate. I mean, people don't really want to know that about Shaq. And I'm like, well, why would a guy who makes that much money and has that much visibility care about having a master's degree?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would he even care about that? Well, I think what's powerful about Shaq, and he's an interesting character, is that my sense of him and watching him is that he understands that having a brand is not enough. Controlling it is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he, and intellectually, you know, he kind of plays off and plays real, whatever, but he controls his brand
mm-hmm.
to the end. And he's very much in it. And that whole, I mean, he got an MBA, I believe, from LSU. He's going to be working on a doctor. So, you know, even the power of that is something, like you said, that's missing in sports. And I would like to see somebody, it's kind of like hip-hop music, like, be different, y'all. Like, you know, who is the sports version? Like, who? Be different.
And as much as we revere Mike, you know, it's his template that everybody's trying to follow because he was just so down the middle, you know, from the Republicans buy shoes to, you know, everything that he did. He was just so down the middle because he just wanted to win. He just wanted to be successful. He just wanted to be the best at whatever, whether it was selling sneakers or whatnot. And I grew up in Chicago during the 80s and early 90s. I was on the south side of Chicago at that time when kids was getting killed for Michael Jordan sneakers. And, you know, and looking back on that and reflecting upon that and hearing about those stories as a kid, of people getting, you know, killed and people getting robbed and beat up and jumped on for Jordan. Mike never spoke out about that for real.
That's right.
Mike never stepped up to address that. You know, he never lowered the price. You know, he never made it so that it was so ridiculously expensive that people, you know, who looked up to him couldn't afford his sneakers.
That's right.
You know, because he was concerned with the fact that Republicans buy shoes too.
That's right.
You know, and it's a template that athletes are following right now. And there needs to be a new template for athletes to go after, but nobody's got the balls to be that.
Well, and looking at Mike, they miss Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, Magic was about winning, but Magic is about entrepreneurship and economic development
mm-hmm.
in communities. So in looking at Mike, they miss Magic, who is equally as successful financially, maybe more, if you start looking at where you really get a sense of his empire.
Right.
You know, and that, you're right, everybody missed what Magic was doing. Like, Magic understood the power of ownership, economic development, and doing that. He's still doing it and demonstrating how you actually roll the game out. And I think if these young cats can take a little bit of Mike and a little bit of Magic and combine that, it could be a powerful force. They don't understand it's a block. Like, it's not just enough for D-Wade and Bosh and LeBron to be together, but y'all need to be developing an economic block Like, how are you going to take over South Florida economically?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how
right.
What's that going to look like when y'all retire? How y'all going to own that area?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got, you know, and what's going to happen with that? You know, how are you going to leverage that? You know, even though you're not playing in Cleveland, how do you leverage that to build opportunities in Cleveland? You know,
mm-hmm.
that's part of the strategy that has to be part of it. But, you know, they're missing that. And that's part of, I mean, hopefully, you know, we're going to have to do a segment on it. That's the part that's missing in these cats. That's the fool's goal for a lot of these cats in terms of how they see them, how they value education and don't
mm-hmm.
do it as a vehicle for them to really have true freedom.
Yeah,
that's
kind
of
the idea we were talking about when we were talking about the one and done and how,
yes.
like, if cash, when you think about it, like, yeah, you want to have the freedom to go to college, go to the pros right out of high school. But going to college for a year or two even increases your ability to market yourself and put yourself out there long term more so than coming out of high school. Because you come out of high school, it's going to be 2 or 3 years before you really hit the big thing, before you really become a household name. Where John Wall, people know who John Wall is right now. And again, those Kentucky fans are always going to be John Wall fans because that's how they do in Kentucky.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Because he, even though he didn't play there for a year, Kevin Durant is always going to be loved in Texas.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And Greg Oden, always going to be loved at Ohio State.
And these are global institutions, which means in the biggest market in the world, China, where
exactly.
I'll be in 2-3 weeks, in Beijing and Shanghai, it is that's the big market. And they have alumni. Kentucky has alumni who,
exactly.
who are natives of China. So
right.
and they gonna have John Wall jerseys and they gonna be paying attention. So you're right. I mean, I think people just don't see the possibilities.
Right.
Very limited scope in this game.
And I think the NBA knows that. And as much as I hate the NBA for trying to play this father figure to these cats all the time with the dress codes and telling them they can't come right out or putting the age limit down. As much as that annoys the hell out of me, I understand it from a perspective, you know, from different perspectives. You know, the dress code, I get it. You need to be presentable. You can't just show up in anything. And, you know, sometimes people need to be told that because nobody ever told some of these. That's one thing I think we take for granted is that, you know, again, like LeBron is surrounded by a bunch of yes men. D-Wade is surrounded by a bunch of yes men. Nobody's telling these cats, you need to do it this way if you want to be successful. Nobody's telling them that. They're saying, okay, bro, you want to wear a T-shirt and some jeans to the game? Wear a T-shirt and some jeans to the game. You're the king. Do what you want. You want to have a one-hour special about your decision? That sounds like a great idea. Let's roll with that. Do what you want. You're the king. Everybody loves you, you know. And sometimes you need somebody to be like, look, okay, that's not how we're going to do this. All right, we're a business. All right, this is professional. And this is how you need to be. Because a lot of those kids, again, don't come from that type of an environment where their parents woke up every day and put on a shirt and a tie. And not that that's the only way to be professional, because I know a lot of professional people and a lot of hardworking people who zip up some overalls before they go to work.
Yeah.
But they got something that they wear to work. You know what I'm saying? They don't dress to go to work like they dress to chill out or do yard work or hang out around the house. You know what I mean? They put on something that symbolizes what they do. And, you know, I think, you know, again, like the NBA does have a bit more foresight. And I think people sleep on David Stern as a commissioner. You know, the NFL right now is a big show. And it is because they're making a lot of good – they've made a lot of good decisions. Now, they're, you know, I wish Ray was here because Ray would dig in on the NFL right now about the CBA coming up. And then just, like, this idea of extra games. And I think the NFL is kind of – I think they had a breaking point, you know. I think they're Fonzie in the leather jacket and they're about to go off that ramp and over
right.
sharp. You know what I mean? So I think the NFL needs to be careful because adding extra games and doing all that kind of stuff, you know, may eventually hurt the brand and hurt what they've built. The reason that people love the NFL is because 16 games. It's on Sunday, 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock game. You know, it's like clockwork. You can set your watch to it. It's on Sunday. Ain't nothing going on Sunday. I can sit down and watch the game. They start to add Thursday night games and 3-4 Monday night games and doing all this other stuff. It's going to oversaturate the market and they don't. They have to understand that they're smart as hell. Like, they have to understand that the beauty of their product is that it isn't oversaturated, you know. And then that's going to affect the quality of play, because you have a team go 14-0 and they got four more games. Are they really going to be throwing their starters out there the whole game for those four games when they got home field locked up because they're 14-0?
Yeah.
You know, when you have an 18-game season, you open that kind of a dynamic up just for the sake of tickets, because it's not going to add anything to the season.
And I think you know, you're laying out some really good points. I'm sitting there just thinking about this, and I'll just end on out in terms of that point about the NBA and even the dress code, as I was talking about preparation of these athletes, is their rationale was this hip hop culture. That was their rationale for telling, rather than we're developing young men to be young businessmen,
mm-hmm.
and there's a stage of development, they try to pinch it against this whole the negative impact of hip hop. At the same time, you know, they're gonna have a theme song, you know, they're gonna have Winner as the theme song, right? With
mm-hmm.
T.I. and all them. So
they
hip hop is a very much part of their all star weekend and movement is a driving force. That if you've ever been in that atmosphere, it's a driving force, and the entertainers drive it, and it's very much part of sitting on the sidelines, Jay-Z and all this other stuff. So the way they couch the reason for doing it is where I see it being hypocritical for David Stern, rather than saying we got, and not to say he didn't say it, but their reason for doing it was talk about the negative impact of hip-hop on the NBA when the whole hip-hop brand helped to drive the NBA to where it is in the 80s and the 90s.
Right.
I mean, it played an integral part of their marketing machine. So, you know, to help drive your market, and be an integral part of it, of your marketing of the league, and then say it's a negative, was where I struggle. And that's why I think the league, it's not about, it's how you kind of look at coming in. I'm not going to go Jesse on them, because I don't think it's that far. But I'm going to say, you know, you are more successful league if you prepare these people to be more successful alumni of your league. Because they have to be ambassadors in long life. And what other, besides winning games, how are we continue to do that? And I know they do things behind the scenes, but that needs to be more in the forefront for where we're going. And at the same time, these players need to be leveraging this power that they have. You know, they're missing opportunities to leverage to make huge gains. Some of these cats got enough money to be, you know, be the massive, the gross national product for a small country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where some of these, if you put Wade
Joe Johnson,
you cast together, I mean, they like us, you know, some of these small nations and stuff, they could be financing. That's where they're at, but I don't think they see themselves with that kind of power. And
right.
it'd be nice maybe for us to get somebody online with us at some point to have this conversation, because I think it's long overdue, and we the kind of folks who can have it.
Exactly.
We coming down here at the end. We got about a minute left. You know, any final thoughts here? You know, we did the run without Ray. We look forward to having him back next week. You know, but we push an education, so he got to be with his daughter, and that's what it's all about.
Right. Final thoughts. Props to Chris Johnson for getting his deal done. I think that was a big move by the Titans. They needed to get that done. I'm excited for camps to be starting. Soon, the Cowboys break camp. I'm going to be watching Hard Knocks with the Jets, checking that out. And, you know, I'm looking forward to football season. It's right around the corner. I can smell it, you know, in the air. Mm-hmm. I can hear John Facenda's voice, you know, waking me up in the morning. So that's a good feeling.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to football as well coming up. We're going to be talking about more about that. We're going to be getting into some fantasy football. Make sure y'all check us out on Facebook and on Twitter. You know, it's twitter.com/realsportsguys. Hit us up on that. And also on Facebook with the /realsportsguysradio. You know, join us on Facebook. We got some polls we're going to have up there. But we look forward to having y'all next week. We'll have Ray back in the fold. Until then, keep it real and keep it nice. Real Sports.
$1,000. He screwed himself. He screwed himself. If he could play better, Doc would have played him. like, whatever you do, don't let it be that deal. Professional AAU team, man. And Joe Johnson, bro. Chicago should not spend that cap money. You know, they talk a little about Rondo came to Boston. Chicago has done it.